Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, broadcasting live from beautiful Trout Lake, Washington, where we just had the 8808 event, and it was an incredible event. We had some just awesome energy come in. We did a very big circle, did a guided meditation, initiated the energies to come in, and people had some pretty phenomenal experiences. We were a little slack on the UFO activity for some reason, but it's probably because of all the other turmoil going on the planet, which we're pretty busy. And the there's a few other things going on, too, as well. We've got Glenn Kimball coming up here on the 30th, it looks like, providing he doesn't get flooded out. So they're having some major flooding where he lives there in Arizona. And so I've got to contact him and get together and see what's going on there. But it seems to be going on all around the world. We seem to have one little disaster after another, and it's getting exponential and seems to be increasing, and which flows right into our guest tonight. We have Cal Ori, and she's best known, I guess, as the woman who predicts earthquakes, and she also has a couple books out on helping to heal your body, and I guess we'll just bring Cal on and go from there. Cal, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, AJ, and hey, everybody.
All right, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's funny listening to that. I guess it's monsoon season in Arizona. My grandmother used to live there, but I'm looking at the California map on the USGS, and we're in a seismic lull. It's boring. If you chase earthquakes like I do and people on Earthquake Epicenter, it's a website. It's really dead. There's just been micro earthquakes today. There was one in San Francisco Bay Area and just, I don't know, a few minutes ago offshore Northern California.
Uh-huh.
By Eureka, but...
I won that bet.
Uh-huh. What did you say?
I said I won that bet.
It's just really low, boring. Gonna have to chase hurricanes or something.
Yeah. Well, didn't you have? Well, you had a bet. Now you work with Jim Berkland as well.
Oh, we still have a wager. I haven't won yet. It's gosh, I can't believe it. I won the first wager for California. We did a 5.0. I took Northern California as always. He takes Southern California, and I won that actually twice. It's about a year and a half ago. Ukiah got a 5.0, but then it was downgraded by the USGS to a 4.8. However, since Jim Berkland's a maverick of sorts, he was going to pay me what we decided to bet on anyway. And then, I don't know, a few weeks later, 5.2 rolled in offshore Northern California by Petroleum Eureka, so I won. I really did win.
Mm-hmm.
So now, he didn't like that, and he wanted to do another wager for a 6.0. And he's taking Southern California of Northern California. Now, I think that 5.4 that just happened recently, that probably released some pressure, not on San Andreas, but released some pressure. So I'm really banking on Northern California. We're so overdue. And
yeah.
I think the least harmful one would be offshore if it's way out in the water. I mean, we might get a tsunami alert like in 2005, but... nothing happened. There wasn't any really real damage from that. And a tsunami really didn't even happen from that either. Just, it makes the tsunami page
mm-hmm.
with the details, but it doesn't necessarily mean a tsunami happens.
Now, how did you come into this? Now, you're an intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And how exactly do you get the information or receive the information on where the next quake would be or...
So many ways. You know, I've always been sensitive looking at it in retrospect, but and I've known Jim Berkland for 20 years. I was writing articles about how animals can sense oncoming quakes for two decades, and I tuned out the human part of it for many years because it wasn't the slant of my articles for national magazines. But then when I decided to write his book in 2004, The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, I interviewed a lot of earthquake sensitives, and I couldn't help but just pick up what they were telling me and teaching me. It was like getting a crash course in ear tones and headaches, which I knew about, which you can get before an earthquake, visions, dreams, anxiety, nausea, got all this fun stuff, you know, body and mind cues before any disaster, and including quakes. And I just started fine-tuning my skills. And I believe anyone can do it, but, you know, if you're super skeptical and if you don't believe in it, you probably can't. And if you don't practice, you're not going to get any better. You know, you might get an air tone, but if you don't practice and fine-tune that, you know, let's just say hypothetically I get a left ear tone right now. For me, I know exactly where that's going to be, but that's taken like 4 years mm-hmm. to figure that out. So it takes perseverance, patience.
Yeah, I've had several people that I've talked to, and including myself, because I was just down in Yahats and was the keynote speaker there. They had a big psychic fair down there. But when I went down there, I got the most incredible leg pain I've ever had, you know, in all my life. It felt like they were broken. And I noticed something really strange going on there is when I first got there, I noticed everybody was in wheelchairs. I've never seen so many wheelchairs in all my life. And then again, I saw when I went to the conference there, I saw so many canes, you know, and people having all kinds of leg problems, operations, you name it. And what I felt is that has to do something with the activity there. It's a very active area, and might be the seismic activity or something, but as soon as I left the area, the pain went away immediately.
You know, that's interesting. Charlotte King, you know, she's a guru from way back when, and she is in The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, and I did interview her on the telephone. She did talk about aches and pains, which she gets before volcanic activity. And I have to say, the past few months, twice, for moderate earthquakes, my back, I felt, and I'm really a healthy girl for my age, a baby boomer, and I don't usually get aches and pains. I'm physical and stuff, but I have to say I did get a backache.
Yeah.
Before these two quakes, and I told my girlfriend, she's the co-founder of Earthquake Epicenter, about it, and of course she said earthquake related. And that's another avenue that I think I'm going to, you know, consider. I don't want it. You know, it's not fun to get these physical things. It's like a curse and a gift at the same time. I'd rather get the mental intrusions, but even those, you know, having visions, like, for instance, I could be swimming laps, which puts me in a meditative trance. You know, it's just really relaxing. And all of a sudden, bam, I'll get this intrusive image, you know, with words or even a physical image of a place, and of a, you know, of a quake happening, and then it will happen.
And my brother, that's happening with my brother right now and his daughter. They're both having visions of a very large quake hitting Northern California, and they saw a tsunami being generated that went over the tops of San Francisco, you know, the bridge there.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and you know, it keeps coming back to them. It keeps reoccurring. And
have a micro earthquake at Daly City. Now, that's where the 1906 quake happened. That's right on the San Andreas. We had that today.
Mm-hmm.
Moss Beach, 10 miles from Daly City.
Oh, yeah.
They moved it. It was by the zoo. I don't know, right? You know, I keep saying West Coast is next.
Mm-hmm.
And anything's possible. This month, we know we've got the partial eclipse, but still the solar eclipse. You know, things could still happen right now. Just something Earth-related wouldn't just happen on the day of the solar eclipse or just in China and Russia. It could happen anywhere, and usually it seems like historically, you know, within a two-week period from the solar eclipse. And then we have a partial eclipse and the full moon on the 16th, and then we have another new moon on the 30th. I was just looking at the tidal graphs, which is on the site that I have before we started talking, and tides don't seem really incredibly high this month, which is probably good, especially when you're talking about tsunamis and things, but I just got a feeling, too, West Coast, and a lot of other sensitives are picking up Northern California. People are saying, Callie, you're going to win the wager. Northern California's next. because they think, you know, of the 5.4, that relieves some pressure down in Southern California, and it's kind of like a ping pong effect.
Yeah, I really felt it. I mean, it was intense down there. And
where were you when you were there? Where were you?
At Yahas.
What's that next?
It's next to Newport.
Oh, you were in Oregon.
Yeah, I was in Oregon.
Oh, with all the offshore, the mysterious sequence. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a volcano going off down there.
Yeah.
They don't want to tell anybody about it, but
yeah.
It's underneath the ocean.
Yeah, it's magma related. And it's the same deal like with our sequence over at Reno, our Reno swarm. Another mysterious, and when they thing, and when the scientists start calling it a sequence, you know you're in trouble. And when they don't solve the puzzle, and they keep going on and on and on, they haven't really produced anything horrific, and they don't stop. You know, they'll stop for a while and they'll start up again.
Mm-hmm.
Both regions, and some people believe that they're actually linked.
You know, that's what I got. When it's funny you mentioned that because. When we talked earlier, I was getting about Northern California, and then the next image I got was Reno.
Great.
I just got an image of Reno in my mind. I said, you know, I think those are the two next places that are going to pop loose.
I wrote that down. I figured you would ask me somewhere along in the show what are my predictions, and I did write that down. It came to me at the last one. Here I'm giving all these places, and then I got this weird feeling. You know, it could just be in my own backyard. And what's scary is I predicted that 4.7 to 5.0 on April 25th, and I got media coverage from MSNBC.com and,
mm-hmm.
oh, God, some other Coast to Coast I was on,
yeah.
on April 29th because of that. I felt it. I knew that quake was coming. We were having a swarm. I mean, a week after... the lunar eclipse, the 6.0 Wells Nevada quake, that's when we began to have our Reno swarm, the Bird Eye Local swarm. And it's been going on for 3 months. And April 15th, it started to escalate with like 20 tremors in a day. And then the magnitude started intensifying. And on the 24th, I was on a radio show Thursday night, and I was really amped, and I just knew a stronger quake was coming. I knew it. And we had, I believe, 2.4s that day, and I didn't feel them, and they're shallow quakes, but I still knew, I just knew something stronger was going to happen. And the next day, my animals, my dogs were really clingy. My cat was doing the old... restless, you know, wanting in one room, wanting out of another room, driving me crazy. He's definitely seismically sensitive. And 3 hours before it hit at 11:42 p.m., I mean, I knew it was coming. I was too tired to go to the store to get water. I realized I was out, so I filled up plastic jugs of water. I got leashes ready in case, you know, there was a gas leak or something so I could put the dogs on leashes. I put the shoes by my bed, and I went to bed early, which I never do, but I was just exhausted. And at 11:42, the quake woke me up, you know, the windows rattled, and I got up and made a cup of tea really quick, chamomile tea, and went to the room, to my study, and clicked on, when I logged on to the USGS map to see the square. You know, a large square goes on the map where the quake hits. And if it's a strong enough quake, sometimes the map goes haywire. And at first they had the quake situated at Oroville. And I thought, oh, my God, if it was this strong here, we're in trouble because there's a dam up there in Northern California. And then the square moved to Loyalton by Truckee. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm so good. That's what I predicted, right, the Sierra? And then it moved over to Reno. And I called Jim Berkland at midnight. And I said, oh, I'm so good. I'm so sensitive. I predicted the quake. And he said, yeah. Yeah. But it was such a rush. It was exciting and it was frightening.
Yeah.
And the residents in Reno were very scared because it's like Jurassic Park there. I mean, the tremors, even the ones and twos, these people can feel them because they're so shallow. And a lot of people moved away. They couldn't sleep at night during this, you know, for over a month. It just, you know, the quakes one after another. It wasn't fun. And plus the scientists, they jumped on the bandwagon and they told us, after that one hit, the 5.0, they told us to be prepared for something stronger. And there has been a 6.0 in Reno historically. But also, I live near fault lines, definite fault lines, and that's what scares me. You know, we've had a 6.0 in Truckee and Gardnerville. We have three known fault lines, one underneath the lake. I live, you know, two blocks away from the lake. So people were really freaked out. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. I know that's one thing that definitely gets everybody's attention, is because everybody depends on the ground beneath their feet to be solid, and they can depend on it. And when it starts moving, you know, all of a sudden that's just, you know, it changes your whole paradigm, you know. And I noticed that, you know, the old saying, they said even the atheist, you know, prays in the foxhole. And in a big quake or a hurricane or whatever, I think it's very interesting how everybody starts, you know tapping in and praying for help and protection and everything else.
When a great quake or a major quake happens and it hits the news with our technology today, what happens is people and the media sensationalize, and people start, they create a panic.
Yeah.
You know, are we next? And then you'll see all the articles, you know, Tahoe could have a sage, like a tsunami, you know, the Cascadian subduction zone, you know, we're going to have the big 9.2. And then the panic starts, and then we start seeing these quakes in China and Japan, where the people definitely panic there. It's funny, a couple nights ago, earthquake. Remember the original show back in 1974 with Charles, how do you pronounce his name, Hesterson?
Oh, Charles Hesterson.
Yeah.
Yes,
People really panicked in that. And I don't know what the magnitude was on that quake, but some of the things they did, it was just absurd. I mean, they all rushed into the elevator. I mean, you do not do that.
Yeah.
People were jumping out of buildings. It was bad. And panic kills. You know, that kills more than the earthquake itself.
Yeah. Fear is, you know, the stress that comes through fear is a slow killer, too. So you just have to, you know, go with the flow, stay tuned, and I guess prepare so you don't have all the worries.
People still, even in this 5.4 in Southern California, there was some panic. Some people were very, very cool and just sat in their chairs. You know, I saw footage. But then other people, like at schools, they were running outside. Some people were crying. The phone lines were jammed. Cell phones, you're not supposed to get on the phone and do that. And it's just human instinct to do it, but you're not supposed to. And so now they're going to have the largest joint effort drill in November to prepare for a major quake in Southern California. And they're preparing for that now. But I don't know. I just don't think they did. I don't think they did a good job at all. They haven't had a strong quake for quite a while. And so maybe they were complacent and they were caught off guard. But, you know, you're not even supposed to run to the door frame. You're supposed to just, like right now, if a quake hit, watch, I'll scream and yell. I'm just supposed to go underneath my desk and just, you know, ride it out, duck and cover. And so many people don't even know that.
You know, what I heard, too, is the desk situation is, from what I found out, is that in statistics, the people that ran underneath their desk when the top roof fell or whatever, it hit the desk and just flattened them, and said you should be next to your desk, not really under it.
Right.
You know?
It's controversial. It's called the triangle. What is it? The triangular triangle of life.
Yeah.
There's another school of thought that believes you're supposed to just kind of like drop and get in fetal position and not get under a desk. The USGS, they say duck and cover, you know, and hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I go with that. That philosophy, especially in the United States. If I lived in Japan or China, I think it would be a bit different because the infrastructure is different.
Yeah.
But then again, it depends on how strong the magnitude is, too.
I know. I've been in several pretty big quakes, and I know with me is that I was out of the building in, you know, probably about 2 seconds. You know, when the quake first started, I was just up and out of the building.
It's human instinct to run out of the building, but let me tell you one reason why it's not a good thing to do here in California. In in a lot of instances, I can't say all, you know, it's an absolute, it depends, but I was living in San Carlos at the time on the peninsula in the Bay Area, and in 1989, the World Series quake hit. Now, I was in the bedroom with an intense headache before I even knew that I got headaches before quakes, and that was the strongest 7.1, the strongest quake I've ever been in, and I'm a native Californian. Okay, so intellectually I knew this was an earthquake, but emotionally it really felt like, I mean, the world was ending. It was very scary. Instinctively I got out of bed. I grabbed my dog. At the time I had a yellow lab. I mean, she could fend for herself. The cat fled, obviously, but I grabbed the dog, and my intention was to make it for the doorway, which was what you did back then.
Yeah.
You know, what, 20 years ago. So it was 15 seconds of the quake. I tried to make it to the doorway, but the floor was buckling. It was so severe. The floor, wooden floors were literally buckling, you know, moving like waves, that I couldn't make it. I fell in the dining room. So there I am amid all these two French glass doors and then all these windows, you know, above me. And that was such a mistake because a lot of windows did bust out.
Oh, yeah.
I cut my leg, which really hurt. And by the time, I crawled. I literally crawled with my dog to the doorway, and then it was over until the aftershock, a strong aftershock, 45 minutes after. But it would have been smarter just to stay in bed. And, you know, but then there was windows in the bedroom at the time, too.
Yeah. I know with big buildings, you definitely don't want to come running out of the big buildings because the glass is all coming down. And
I would hate that. You know, this LA quake was strong, even though it was a 5.4. They started saying it was a 5.8, and the intensity was 6. But I was on radio shows, about 4 of them, in Los Angeles 2 weeks prior, and I made the prediction that Palm Springs would be the epicenter or within a 50-mile radius. It would be a 5.0 to 5.5. I made this early July, and the window would end at July 31st. So I really kind of wowed a couple radio producers because they felt it. And one of them was actually on, I think, a 36th floor. I couldn't handle that. I think that would just sway back and forth. And having people screaming and freaking around, I couldn't handle that.
I was offered a job once in Studio City, and it was back in the day, like another lifetime ago, when I was doing commercial real estate. And it was in one of the tallest buildings there with the, you know, incredible view and everything. And I was up there in the office, and they showed me my office and everything. I looked out that window, and I just said, you know, this is not, there's no way. I can't do this. And walked away from it.
You know, when I lived in the Bay Area, my dentist was on Post Street, and I was following Birkeland's windows, you know, his seismic windows, which are based on lunar cycles and tides, and if the lost animals were really up in numbers, if all that was going on, if I was just going to have my teeth cleaned, I would cancel the appointment and reschedule. It wasn't worth it for me to go to Post Street, you know, in the financial district, at 5 o'clock at night. I mean, why? You know, who would want to do that?
Yeah.
It would be the last place you'd want to be, you know.
You know, he had I sent in a deal, and I put it out on my newsletter, too. We had a quake up here. Oh, God, it must have been 2 or 3 years ago. I'm trying to remember, more like 3 years ago. Actually, it was about 4 years ago. They had that Seattle quake near Seattle. They had a 7-point-something. Didn't do much damage.
What, the Nisqually quake back in 2001?
Was that too?
The Nisqually quake in 2001?
It might have been it. I don't know. It was quite a while ago.
I think that was one. It was 6.8, but they toy with the magnitudes. I'm thinking it's the, or unless it was, I think it's, I don't know why 2001.
One was near Olympia. Wasn't it near Olympia?
I don't know, in the book. I think it was 2001.
It could have been. It probably was. I'm really bad about that.
There's the Nisqually quake, 2001, 7.0. I'm looking at the book. I have the date right.
That might have been it. I'm trying to remember the people that were around me at the time, and that's about right. It was around 2001. But I know that there was a list, and I sent it in on the list, and I told them that there was going to be a major quake in that area near Seattle. God, it was a long time ago, but I put it on Jim's list.
Yeah, it was 2001.
And he sent me an email back, and he said, good one, you know.
It was 2001, the Nisqually earthquake rocked Olympia in Seattle,
yeah,
at 11:54 the next morning.
Uh-huh.
And one woman was on the 37th floor of the Washington Mutual Tower in downtown Seattle. She said, quote, I ducked under a table. She sensed it was going to come, you know, a couple days before. I ducked under a table and counted it out, 20, 21, 22 miles on, and continued up to about 30 seconds. Oh, my
wow.
God. We saw bricks had fallen from the old buildings across the street on 2nd Avenue, and then they announced on the intercom that we could not use the elevators, you know, I wonder why, until they were inspected. I was excited and really not concerned too much about my safety. Because she was expecting the quake. See, that's the cool thing. If you can sense these, and then just like that one that hit here, it was exciting because I knew it was coming. It's better than being caught by surprise.
Yeah.
Then it's like a monster. I mean, I'd rather know a monster's going to come get me than be caught off guard.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because I'm really different than most people, and I have a lot of friends that are that way, too. And they welcome the earth changes. And they're excited about it. And they're going, all right, let's go. You know, let's clean up this planet. Let's get going. You know, let's move.
Well, we can't fight it. We can't prevent it. So, you know, when I was a teenager, I was really scared. And now it's just a sense of empowerment if you just go with the flow. And since we do chase earthquakes, it is exciting. It's like that movie Twister, you know, where they were waiting for the tornadoes to happen. You know, they're kind of bored and just kicking back. But when it happens, you can just feel that rush, that endorphin rush.
Oh, yeah.
And especially if you get a hit. Now, of course, you don't want to see people die and get hurt and infrastructure damage and all that. But it really is a great feeling to know that your sixth sense can work and you can predict this stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, that's what I've felt the same thing too, is that you can sense these things when they're coming. And when I was down there, it's funny because I knew it's the one, something was going to hit down there when I was down there in Yahats. And I told the people, I said, you know, I think in about a week you guys are going to have a quake here because there's something moving. I don't know if it's a magma flow or what, but I can feel it. And every cell in my body was saying, go home.
Oh, that was a couple weeks ago. I predicted that. That was the 5.5 and a 5.7, right?
I think you're saying they just had one there.
Yeah, the 5.5 and 5.7.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I had actually predicted that, and to a few radio hosts as well. I don't think it's over, but again, I'm just looking at the whole map right now, and everything's just, it's just really slow. Alaska was getting, it had a 5 today, a 5.4.
Yeah. Well, I was feeling it down. When I was down there, it hasn't happened yet, but I was feeling it down there when I was down there. I was down there on the 2nd, I think, the 2nd and the 3rd. I think I came back here on the 3rd, and, I think we're on the 9th right now. So, but I told him, I said, something's moving down here. It just doesn't feel right. And something's getting ready to bust loose.
Have you ever been on fault lines?
You know, when I drive over a fault line, I get this, I get a pain in my leg immediately. As soon as I'm on the fault line, I know.
I lose my equilibrium.
Yeah.
Jim Berkland, when we were doing a book tour in the Bay Area, we had time to kill in between the signings, and he drove me up to Mount Diablo, and it's a really windy road, and we got up there. I couldn't even get out of the car. And the same deal when we went down to Palmdale in San Andreas, I just felt really, not, it just didn't feel right.
Does it make you just real spacey, like you're...
Like what?
Real spacey, kind of?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Just,
I remember, I mean, we were in Palmdale, and we went up to this house to tell these people that they resided on a fault line, like they really didn't know or really wanted to know, and I didn't even want to be part of it. I just sat down with these two stray dogs on the ground. I didn't want to move. I mean, I was just out of it. I didn't feel good at all.
I wonder what is that? Because if the fault line, it must be in constant movement, creating those, you know, piezoelectric waves or something.
Animals are sensitive to it, too. Berglund had told me about some dog before the World Series quake went bonkers by a fault line before that quake happened.
Yeah.
Just.
Well, I was in there. I saw visions of that one, and I was given the exact date and time of the San Francisco quake, and I missed it by... I said it was going to be 6.9, and the first readings were 6.9.
Some people still say they are. It differs.
And then it went to 7.1. I think they kicked it up for insurance means, but or to get more state money or something. But the what was interesting is that I went on record, and I was in Santa Cruz. I was living in Santa Cruz before it happened. And, I mean, it was almost a year ahead of time. I told them it was happening. I had visions of it, and I saw the buildings coming down. You know, I saw the whole thing, and I tried to tell people about it, and I basically got, you know, kicked out of Unity Church because I kept telling them they needed to tell people and let people know this was coming, and there's a couple other places I tried to tell them about, and they kicked me out of there and said, you know, you're creating it, you know, you're creating fear and all this other stuff, and I said, well, thanks for, you know, all the power you're giving me, but I really don't think I'm that powerful, you know, so...
People don't want to hear. I mean, some people want to hear, but a lot of people don't want to hear this stuff.
Well, I just stopped doing it. It's really interesting because all it did was piss everybody off, and nobody really cared. And after it happened, when I saw the people again, they're still angry at me for not listening. So I was trying to figure out, well, what's the point? You know, and...
Because there are some people that do care. Here it is. It's July 17th. It was a 5.6 off the coast of Oregon. I thought they upgraded it to a 5.7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they did. They upgraded it July 17th to 5.7, and there was a 5.5.
Yeah.
That was exciting, but then it all stopped again.
I think people are changing now because they're starting to take it a little more serious than they... You know, with global warming and the poles melting, I mean, they're going to be the North Pole, they expect, is going to be gone, you know, towards the end of summer. There's not going to be...
I don't know. Global warming. I did a humor book with a comedian, a New York comedian. The book didn't do well because it was tongue-in-cheek humor, and I don't think people really understood it. Part of it was done through two beached whales, you know, with the whales will beach themselves often before a quake.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that part of the whales. One was really, you know, believed in, you know, sensing earthquakes, and the other one was just kind of didn't believe in it. But the book is kind of an antithesis of an inconvenient truth of Gore, who I believe that goes way over... overboard, you know, with all the polar bears dying and everything. And I did interview a lot of geologists for that book. And Jim Berglund agrees with me on this, that global warming, he actually did the foreword for the book. We believe in cycles. And this global warming thing, I think it's happening a bit, but I don't think it's happening to the proportion that some people believe that it is.
Yeah.
I just think that Earth changes happen, and it's a cyclical thing.
No, I think it's definitely part of a bigger cycle,
right?
That happens naturally, and that we're aggravating it, you know, with all the CO2 and the other thing.
That's true. I'll agree with that.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's if all this water starts moving around, what's that going to do? Because you know we know how heavy water is, and if it starts moving around on the planet and it's no longer where it was, that's going to create a lot of plate tectonics or movement.
I still think there's worse worries.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know, if you asked me how the world would end, would it be natural disaster or would it be man-made, I would definitely say man-made through war instead. I mean, natural disasters definitely cause casualties. Look at the Indian Ocean quake in 2004. what, 300,000 people died. But if we have a war, I think it's going to be a lot more and a lot worse.
I've always felt there's a definite tie-in to human consciousness.
Right.
And the Earth changes. And they've done a lot of statistical analysis on that. And they said that when we, in the other wars that we went through, the world wars, that we had just the worst weather we've ever had. And severe storms and everything else. And I always feel it's tied together.
That's interesting. I talked to somebody, I forgot who it was, a while ago, that believes in a collective consciousness of people. A visionary, Clarissa Bernhardt, do you know who that is?
Yes.
Yeah, she believes that that occurs during holidays. And that's why she believes that major earthquakes may happen more so during holidays, because people, you know, their emotions are really high often.
Yeah.
And strong quakes can happen during that time. And the Indian Ocean quake was on Boxing Day,
mm-hmm.
a day after Christmas. The 1964 Great Alaska quake, you know, on Good Friday. But then there's a lot of great quakes that didn't happen on a holiday, so, you know, the skeptics will argue that.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have tied, they've done charts, and they've tied in major changes with the solar activity, and I definitely believe in that, because I think whenever you have a massive, you know, solar flare come in or something of that nature, it's about, you'll see the first event that happens is people start acting crazy and really weird and get real irritable. And then the weather starts going bonkers, and then, you know, within a week or two, we have a big quake or something major happens.
Well, they'll do that during the full and new moon, too. You'll talk to people at ER facilities saying people, there's more, you know, injuries coming in at that time. And even in heat waves, I notice that I get really irritable. I can imagine living in a really hot place. I wouldn't want to. You know what's coming alive as we talk is... somebody said, every time I go on radio, it's when the earthquakes happen. I guess it's like being pregnant. If you do something, you know, you do it's labor. But Hawaii is starting to get some quakes right now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, and they're overdue, too.
Where are they?
On the Big Island, of course. They're usually on the Big Island. Birkeland has a... Sometimes you'll do a MOS prediction, a monthly outright. I forget what the acronym means, but it's just it's an intuitive prediction for him, and he'll do it. And he said that Hawaii may get a 4.5 this month.
Yeah.
So I've been watching that.
I could tell you a bizarre story, which can be verified by quite a few people, but we were at that, I think it's the King Kamehameha Hotel there on Kona. And they were doing the big exopolitics conference there. And I was there with several people. And one of the things I do is I teach people how to really get out of your body and go beyond just this physical reality and things of that nature. So I had a group there, and it was a very powerful group, and they're all... you know, residents there of Hawaii, and they all taught classes and did workshops and things. And we all got together, and I took them through this ceremony, this exercise, and it's a guided meditation, and you know, to move up out of the body and experience the other dimensions. And right when I did that, we had this quake right underneath it. And I think it was, I can't remember what the size, it was 5-point-something, maybe 5.6 or something. And it really busted loose. And we're in this altered state, and nobody in the room felt it at all. And when we came back into this awareness of this reality, we walked outside, and everybody was outside just flipping out, and all you could see, they're all panicked. And I go, what happened? You know, none of us even knew it happened. So it seems to be that you can actually move out of this frequency or into another timeline or something, and avoid these things altogether. But I mean, that takes probably years and years of practice to do things of that nature. But I always wondered if we woke up as a collective, we could actually, as a collective, change timelines or alter these events.
That's what another talk show host said. I forget his name. It was about a month ago. He said the same thing. He asked me if it's possible they could, a collective consciousness could stop quakes. Oh, I know who it was. Arf Do you know the Arf people?
No.
The Bigfoot guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he was talking about. Is it possible, like what you're saying, where we could actually, you know, stop these things from happening if we put all of our thoughts, positive thoughts, toward that?
Yeah, I really do. The power
well, you can act, the power
of intent is very powerful, you know. But
it is. The mind is extremely powerful. I mean, it's been proven that you can heal yourself by having positive imagery and having positive thoughts. And negative thoughts, you could actually make yourself sick.
Mm-hmm.
You could actually even get cancer, you know, from negative thoughts. And I'm wondering if sometimes when I get these images, and but then they intrude me. It's not like I really want it to happen.
No.
You know,
no.
And when it just comes into my mind, I didn't invite it. It comes, and then it happens.
That's exactly what I was trying to explain. I said I don't focus on this. It's just shown to me, and it's not like I spend all day meditating trying to find the next event.
Right.
Know?
Somebody was asking me if I was a witch because you know witches can do spells, and I guess they can focus on something and make it happen. And no,
it more sounds like an enlightened person, not a witch. That's part of our natural state that people have forgotten and just identified with a body and a personality as their only reality.
I saw on your site about your near-death experience and it drowning, and that really intrigued me because, like I said, I'm really a dedicated swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you where, when, and what happened? Where?
I was down in a place called Little Corona. Do you know where that is?
No.
It's in Southern California. It's right next to the Wedge. And we're out body surfing on a sandbar pretty far out. And what happened is these sneaker waves came in out of nowhere. And they...
What kind of waves?
They call them sneaker waves.
Is it an undercurrent or...
What it is three or four waves all come together as one. They kind of join together because of some disturbance. It could be a major storm created it or a fault line, you know, busting loose or something.
So just out of the blue, like a mini tsunami?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And we were out there, and it was maybe 6 to 8 foot waves, and I was, you know, an avid swimmer. And so I didn't think it would be a problem at all. And next thing you know it, you know, there's 17 to 25 foot waves coming in and sucking all the water out, you know. So I mean, I was actually running in about ankle-deep water trying to dive under this wave because it was so big when it came in, it pulled all the water out and swatted me just like a fly, you know.
Were you caught under the undercurrent?
Yeah, it hit me so hard it dislocated my shoulder and slammed me on the ground. I tried to dive under it, but there really wasn't much to dive under. I kind of dove into it. And it broke right on top of me, and then it just held me under forever.
Did you panic or no?
No, I was trying to get out, but when I finally got out of it and came up to the surface again, I couldn't breathe because my diaphragm was collapsed. I was hit so hard. And then the next wave hit me and did the same thing, held me under forever. And I was just coming up, and I was about ready to get air, and then the third wave hit me, and then I just let go. I just said, oh, I guess that's it, you know, and did the tunnel routine that everybody talks about. But it was the most blissful thing I've ever experienced.
I know. I did an article years ago for Cats Magazine on cats that have actually had near-death experiences, and then I talked to humans that have, and I'm very envious because it sounds so cool, and I've never even come near, never close. I believe my cat, he was 18, I loved him to death, Gandalf, and he had a near-death experience. I thought he died, but he came back to life, and he gave me 6 more months. But now that experience is supposed to be outrageous.
Well, you know what I really brought back from it is that I had a conversation. I was a light being at that time, and I was one with this greater light or consciousness that was surrounding me. It was the golden light. And they call it the plane of bliss, and it was. It was the most blissful, secure feeling you could ever imagine. There's no words that can cover it.
Does anybody ask you if you want to come or go?
You know, I decided myself because the first thing I asked was, how can I stay? And
oh, you didn't want to come back? You
no,
wanted...
it was so incredible, and there was a transmission, like a thought-to-thought. You're communicating at the same time. and you're unique, yet you're one with this greater light or greater consciousness. And I asked, how can I stay? And there's it came back to me and said, I never told one of my children when to come or go. That's free will. And then I asked, well, how can I earn the right to stay? And it came back to me and says, you cannot earn what is given freely and unconditionally. I'm going, wait a minute, this isn't the God I was taught about, you know, this wrathful guy with a beard and, you know, laptop keeping track of everybody. And so, and then I said, how can I serve? You know, you just want to give back when you're in that light and that experience. You're so grateful. And, I didn't get an answer for quite a while, and finally it came back to me and said, what do you want to do? What brings you joy? And I said, you know, I really want to go back and teach people about the true nature of God, you know, because people are given all these wrathful images and incorrect images and far less than omnipresent or universal, you know. The last words I heard were, as you wish. And I was back in the body, which is why I named this radio show,
As
You Wish.
I just figured that out. Yeah, that's
radio,
really cool.
So. But I came back with this understanding and experience that it's just pure, unconditional love and joy and bliss, and it doesn't even have an ego to judge, and that we keep our own books, and we have to forgive ourselves and move forward and release the past. And
yeah, you know, it's funny. I always think, you know, people are afraid to die and how awful it is to die, but how do we know there isn't a better place? I'm Catholic, and,
yeah.
You know, I don't know, also as you age, you start thinking about mortality and everything more so than when you're younger and think you're invincible, but it would be really funny if there is a better place, and here, this is hell. I mean,
that's pretty much the way it is. This is Hertzian frequency, the physical, and you know, pretty much Jesus said heaven and hell are all, basically, you know, when they asked him where heaven was, and he said it's all around you, so... It is a state of consciousness or a state of, and you know, I've seen people, a good example, I know people living in Hawaii right on the beach in heaven, you know, beautiful place, and they're in such a funk and upset and sad and, you know, bummed out and lonely, and
well,
I go, how do you do that? How do you do that living here, you know?
It's the same deal, though, in Tahoe. You know, I live in Lake Tahoe, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful place. You know,
yeah.
You see it glorified in movies, and every time I come back here from book tours, I feel like the trees embrace me, and this is really my home. I've lived here for 9 years. But people do get caught up in these two areas, Hawaii, which I've been to. My sister lives on the Big Island. It's because... In tourist towns, you have to work harder. If you have a real job, you have to rely on, you know, lower wages. You know, off season, it's hard for people that work in towns. The price of gas, inflation, you know, food, especially on the islands,
yeah.
It's really high. Here, it's really high. So I think that's why people are in a funk. It's hard to make ends meet. More so than living in a big city where wages are higher, but then again, cost of living can be high in a big city too.
Yeah, and the stress levels and everything else. I think it does. It all goes back to consciousness, because if you just simplify, you know, you can live abundantly by just simplifying.
That's true. If you try and live above your means, then it just causes more and more stress. So that's really, really true. It's funny that you say that, because I keep saying I want to move to a house twice as big, but then an astrologer friend of mine or my webmaster, somebody told me, don't do it, because think of the stress level. Everything's going to be twofold. My utilities will be twofold. You know, the mortgage twofold. Everything will be, so why do I want to do that?
Yeah, it's not a time to take on more debt and more, you know,
it isn't.
More of a burden. It's definitely time to kind of simplify and
so stay put.
Sovereign, yeah.
Astrologer said stay put. I believe in the same, when in doubt, don't. I have no clue where I want to move to, so why would I just get up and move?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I know that one exactly.
So you're telling me I should stay put too? That's what I'm sensing.
You know what I would do? The way I feel about this, with the earth changes and everything going on in the economy,
mm-hmm.
The whole nine yards, it's just common sense to just, you know, go down and buy a couple bags of rice and beans and get your basics covered, and then you have peace of mind. And no matter what happens, you know, get yourself a good little camp stove or something, and you know, at least you've got something to eat, and, you know, get a good down bag, you know.
Wow, so you're really getting back down to the basics.
Yeah, and you know, once your bases are covered, it's amazing how much peace you can get, because if you haven't prepared or anything else, there's always that little voice, you know, and it's
that's probably true for any type of disaster, because disaster can hit anywhere, anytime, and it can be in nature made or man made, and we've seen it all over the world, from New York coming up with the anniversary of 9/11. You know, I just saw the movie the other night, Rain Over Me. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It was really, really touching about how Adam Sandler, I love him, he lost his family on the plane in 9/11, and, you know, he had a real hard time dealing with the loss. For 4 years, he couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
But disaster can hit any time, and
oh, yeah.
I guess it's better to prepare before it happens than when it happens, if you're not prepared mentally, physically, spiritually.
Well, that's one thing I've learned, is that we can't attach our love, our joy, anything to anything outside of ourselves. And if we carry that with ourselves and understand there is a sacred circle of life, that everything is continuing. You know, one person I took down to a hospital to all these babies, and they're grieving over the loss of their husband, you know, and she's just loving these babies, looking at all of them. And I said, well, you know, if he didn't make space, you know, this baby wouldn't be here. You know, I said, it's a circle, and you know, he'll be back, you'll be back, everybody's back, you know, but just don't put all your stock in the body, you know.
No, that's good philosophy.
Yeah, you know, that's what I see. And if somebody's suffering, you know, it's good to drop the body every once in a while, you know, and come back and get a new one, because if it's not getting you where you need to go and it's falling apart and everything else.
I agree with that. We treat animals that way, but in our state, California, we don't. In Oregon, it is acceptable.
Yeah, a lot of Native American cultures, they just go out and sit and leave. You know, they go up on a mountaintop and say, okay, today's a good day to go, and oop, they're gone, you know.
Where is that?
A lot of Native American cultures have retained, you know, some of that ability. You know, we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Yeah, it went by so fast.
Yeah, it's amazing. I want you to give out, you know, your website
to
everybody.
Sure, okay. It's calorey, calorey.com. And on the homepage, you'll see right on the, kind of near the top to the right, Earthquake Epicenter, a link. And go to that for everything from volcanoes to weather watching. Just, it's a whole playground. It's just filled with everything, the USGS map, the graphs for the tides, National Weather Service, anything and everything you want more.
Well, be sure and give me a call if you feel anything, you know, pending or coming up. Or
everyone tells me that. I can't believe it.
I'll send you an email. How's that?
Oh, God. You know, I looked at where you live. You live in a funny little place. You're not really, you're not up in Seattle. You're kind of in a safe place in a way, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're definitely. We're east of the Cascades at 2,000 feet in this beautiful little valley here.
Yeah, I saw
very
that.
Safe.
So you're pretty safe. I think you're in a safer place than I am right now.
Oh, yeah. It's like heaven up here, too. It's a beautiful place.
Well, good for you.
Well, we've got to run. So,
okay.
I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have you on again soon, especially if things start rocking and rolling.
Yeah, after I win the wager with Berkeley, we'll both come on.
Yeah, yeah. When you win the wager, just give me a shout, and we'll see
if I live through it.
And we can gloat, you know, together.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. Stay tuned, and stay tuned to your body and your body signals and the ears ringing and little aches and pains and things like that, and see if they correspond with earth changes or earth movements. And if they do, keep an eye on them, and who knows, we have the best little forewarning thing right above our 2 feet. So we're signing off right now. Have a great evening, and take care, and God bless. Good night.